Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Groundhog Day, Thursday, February 2nd. And our first item of business is the approval of the minutes. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I approve the minutes of January 31st.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there a discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we have a special hearing today. No bills, but we did this in 2021. I thought it was very impactful, and we'll do it again this year in person, which I'm very excited about. We have an entire hearing devoted to transit equity. This is really to correspond with the upcoming birthday of Rosa Parks, and I think, you know, her example was sort of the intersection of mobility and justice and civil rights. And so so we have a number of presentations and testimony today. I'll just ask, we will take breaks intermittently for member questions, and a number of people who will be making presentations. I want to remind those who will be testifying to stay within the time limits that were prescribed to you. And with that, we'll start with MJ Carpio. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning, Chair Hornstein and members of the Transportation Committee. My name is MJ Carpio. I'm with Move Minnesota. We are an organization advocating for expanded public transit, and we're also part of a coalition that's advocating for improved walking, biking, and rolling infrastructure. Thank you for hosting Transit Equity Day. It's a celebration of Rosa Parks' birthday and the accomplishment of promoting transit as a civil right. But we still have a long, long way to go. Equity in a societal and even legal sense means fairness. And if we're asking people to be full, mobile, contributing participants in our societies, then we also need to provide the fair means to do so. And in a transit context, that means access to bus lines close to people's homes, frequent and reliable service, decriminalizing people who rely on transit for warmth, and giving transit operators and the staff the incentives and the tools to meet safety and accessibility needs for any and all passengers. And holistically speaking, equity also means clean air, clean water, and a climate that won't perpetuate existing inequalities. And transportation remains to be the number one source of pollution in the state of Minnesota. And no, it's not from public transit, it's from cars, SUVs, trucks, and minivans. And this is a problem that we may not experience equally, but it is a problem that we have to solve collectively. And this is not to say that cars have to have no place in society with a snap of a finger. I'm super grateful for all the carpool rides that I've gotten to take to go to the Boundary Waters or Lake Superior, even the Iron Range. And, you know, as a lifelong public transit user, I felt forced to own a car about 2 years ago to supplement my transit use, and I acknowledge that. Yet it's different from car dependence. A society that's willfully designed to be car dependent is neither equitable nor is it sustainable. And so with that, today you'll hear from other transit riders and advocates about their experiences, and from local and national experts about increasing access to transit and reducing dependence on cars. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. I look forward to working with members of this committee to get the necessary funding and policies for world-class transit here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next testifier is Dan Collison. Is Dan here?
I just arrived.
Oh, okay. If you want to, yeah. The podium straight ahead. You need to catch your breath for a few seconds.
Yes, I apologize. Here?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee just in time.
Yes.
And please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair.
And identify any organizational affiliation that you have.
Yes. So my name is Dan Collison. I'm Director of Business Development and Public Affairs for Sherman Associates. We're a real estate development company based in Minneapolis, but develop across the state. And I travel across the state, including Duluth and Rochester, to build housing, with about 70% of that being affordable. I'm here to speak on behalf of this important matter because I've been a public transit user and advocate for many years. The last 10 years of my life prior to working for Sherman Associates, I was a pastor in downtown Minneapolis, also a business association leader, and used the bus every day. In fact, I would travel with Chair Hornstein from South Minneapolis and get to know not only him and other Minneapolitans, I had the privilege of understanding the ins and outs of transit and how it benefited everyone across income types. At that time, I worked as a business association leader and was able to understand the downtown workforce as well as people who live downtown. First Covenant Church, where I was a pastor, had a number of folks who faced homelessness, and we had advocacy in how they got around in public transit and really begun to understand the primary nature and need of all the citizens, whether they were impoverished or whether they had resources to use public transit. My children use public transit to go to Minneapolis College and to Normandale College. And all along the way, I got to know the leadership of Metro Transit and was beginning to learn of the funding issues that we had and how we continually spent a lot of time and energy and anxiety as to how transit would be funded across the state, and became an advocate to understand this piece and why I'm here today. So I'm here today to testify to the importance of it, not only in the Twin Cities, but across the state as I travel to Duluth and to Rochester, where transit helps all citizens, and I would advocate that we find a way to find permanent funding for our transit system so that all Minnesotans, including Minneapolitans, St. Paulites, Rochesterites, Duluthians, where I go, and we provide housing, are able to get around and be able to get to schools and grocery stores and doctor's appointments that are so vital to their existence. Thank you for having me. Sorry for being here right at the nub.
Yeah, well.
And call me anytime to speak about transit. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We had some very good conversations on the number six.
We did.
Thank you for coming and your work in the community. Next, we have Dr. Yingling Fan from the University of Minnesota. And some of us will be at the U tomorrow in a special transportation seminar, so we appreciate all of your work over the years on this issue. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Hornstein and the committee members. My name is Yingling Fan. I'm a researcher and a professor at Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. My research in the past 20 years has focused on the issue of transportation equity. That includes uncovering existing inequities and injustice in our transportation systems, as well as putting people's lived experience at the center of transportation planning to foster healthy and just communities. So my research focused a lot on health equity. Our transportation system has not been equitable or healthy because we have effectively prioritized the building highways and use of private cars. Our dependence on fossil fuel-powered cars and trucks have shattered our communities, poisoned our air, and made private vehicle ownership necessary for full participation in society. Our transportation system has not been equitable or healthy because we have underinvested in public transit and overinvested in moving people in private vehicles. As a society, we have not provided bus and train riders the same level of service that we provide to private car owners. Multiple transfers and slow bus services mean few job opportunities for parents without cars and a few childcare, education, and family activities for their children. Our transportation system has not been equitable or healthy because we have not put the people's lived experience, especially the lived experience of underserved communities, at the center of transportation funding. My research investigating people's lived experience has shown that transportation is more than a mean to get from point A to point B. It's essential to all aspects of people's lives, including work, family, health, community, and spirituality. So to the haves, the good transportation means well-paved roads and quick snow removal in the winter. But to the have-nots, good transportation means a dignified life, a place to call home, a living wage job, and essential connections to families and friends. So please allow me to read a very powerful quote from one of our research study participants, which epitomizes what transportation means to the have-nots. Here is the quote. "When you don't have ways to get around, it puts a stamp on your whole life. I believe that transportation is just the beginning of a pyramid. Everything else is kind of a domino effect. If you don't have access to good transit, then you can't keep a job. If you can't keep a job, you can't keep your home. Now you are homeless. You are struggling with homelessness. It's all a domino effect. Poor transit service has affected me because I cannot see my son as often, and I cannot go to the store to get things that I need because I can't get around when I need to." So dear committee members, when you make transportation decisions, I ask you to reflect on their importance to people's lives and invest in sustainable long-term funding for better public transit for everyone. By investing in public transportation, we can unite and connect people beyond their differences. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fannin. Your quote reminded me, we had a field hearing a number of years ago in St. Cloud, and I'll never forget one of the testifiers said simply, "What good is a job if you can't get there?" So reminded me of that that moment. Our next testifier is Will Schroer.
Thank you, Chair.
To the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. Thank you for having me and all of us here today, and I want to thank MJ for her support and not just the tech support. My name is Will Schroer. I'm the executive director of East Metro Strong. As the name suggests, we're in a partnership between cities, counties, employers on the east side of the metro, but we are supportive of good transportation for everybody in Minnesota. You're going to hear of a lot of perspectives today, and what I'd like to add to the conversation is a financial perspective on equity, and I hope that that is helpful to you. The approach that I'd like to take is a sort of, and not to make light of it, but ripped from the headlines approach, and let's just follow some of the news over the last couple of years and see what kind of insight it might suggest to us. Last year, we read a lot of headlines about the increasing cost of used cars, and CNN pointed out that they have become literally unaffordable. I thought that CNN did a nice job in particular because they didn't focus only on the price of the car, but the income that would or would not allow you to buy and maintain that car. And just following on Professor Fan's comments, the real world impact of the widening gap between prices and incomes means that you have to spend more of your life, assuming that you can get to the job, working for your car, literally working for your car. Since then, we've seen a number of headlines that suggest that used car prices are coming down, inflation is easing, et cetera. And I want to take just 30 seconds to put that in context. Used car prices, sticker prices, have come down from their tip-top peak. They've started to go up a little bit again. No one really knows where they're going to go. But I want you to look in context, or let's all look together in context. Yeah, they're down from 2020, 2021. They're double what they were sort of back in the day. And I haven't met anybody in or out of the more narrowly focused automotive world that thinks we're going to go back to 2015 levels of car prices. Not soon, probably not ever. We are in a new normal of cars that are expensive to buy and expensive to maintain as they continue to get more complex. So if you are a Minnesotan who's looking at their choices and trying to decide, do I need to buy a car? Can I afford it? So AAA, a lot of different views on AAA, but they're quite objective observers of the actual costs of car ownership, observed a new record this year. Costs of new car ownership have passed, for the first time ever, $10,000 a year, real money. So maybe you don't want to spend $10,000, or you can't spend $10,000 a year, so you're looking at used car prices. As I mentioned, those are falling, but at the same time, interest rates are going up, so the net is that the actual monthly payments have continued to increase. Those are not going down. And so monthly car payments for a used car, roughly $500 and change a month, that's better than $6,000 a year. That's before you put any gas in it. That's before you maintain it. That's before you insure it. $6,000 a year just to sort of have a car in your driveway. Well, if you don't have $6,000 a year, or if you have better uses for that money, what are your other options? And we tend to talk, I think, not always helpfully in Minnesota, but we do. We divide the state into the region and then greater Minnesota. So let's just do that for a second. Here in the region, greater MSP, the region's economic development lead, has identified, with the help of a lot of different stakeholders, a goal, and recognizing that, again, following on Dr. Fan's observation that you need to be able to get to a job, right, as sort of the start of your life, we need to have jobs that are near transit. We need to have transit that are near jobs, and set a goal for how to measure that. That accessibility measure, as established by Greater MSP, has been falling steadily and is now worse than it was in 2016. So your options there are not good. Let's say you live in Greater Minnesota. Minnesota DOT, again, I think an objective observer of the situation, is tasked by you, the legislature, with tracking public transit needs and provision in Greater Minnesota. They've established a substantial unmet need for public transit in Greater Minnesota and quantified what it would cost to meet that need. Right now, over the next 5 years, it's $350 million. That's the size of the need, the unmet gap for people living in Greater Minnesota who need public transportation and don't have it today. So to recap, if you don't have the $6,000 a year, wherever you live in Minnesota, you are facing a reduced or maybe non-existent set of transportation options. I'm going to keep referring back to Dr. Fan's testimony because it's so good. A slight version of that, I'm privileged to be part of Go Washington. This is an initiative of Washington County, the government of Washington County. And, you know, in Washington County is sort of an interesting example of urban, suburban, and rural residential situations. Their residents, as covered by the county, have expressed to them the impacts of their inability to reach their doctor, their family, their grocery store, because of the lack of transit, and encourage you to think about these observations by real people. So I want to conclude with, again, a headline from Bloomberg that because of all these factors, people are falling behind on their car payments. They're literally losing their cars for repossession, and Bloomberg says that's forcing consumers to make tough choices. What are the choices in Bloomberg's view? Car or no car? Those are your choices. And for too many Minnesotans, those are their choices as well. You're going to hear from a lot of other people about better choices that we can offer to Minnesotans, but I wanted to leave you with that stark choice that too many Minnesotans face today. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your testimony, Mr. Schroer. I'll take a pause here just to see if there are any questions or comments from committee members to any of the testifiers. Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to Mr. Schroer, who was just here. This is a complicated issue that isn't nearly as simple as was presented, that we just need to have more transit or $350 million. And the reason why I say that is because, unfortunately, currently, the only funding sources we have is based upon making sure that people are driving cars. And you see the complexity of that is that we are trying to figure out how to fund increasing and growing subsidies in order to make public transit cheaper and easier and accessible while putting bigger and bigger burden on those that drive cars the way that current funding structure is. And one of the things that we talk about is how expensive it is to drive cars and that transportation form is very costly. And yet no one has talked about how do we help people that are using transit pay a higher percentage of the cost of running it without having to dip into the pockets of everybody around them in order to pay for that process. And I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm not trying to point fingers. I'm just saying it's very complex when the current system is there and there has been such a resistance to taking any money for that subsidy out of general fund dollars that it has to be constitutionally dedicated. It has to come from all these things from MnFest and others that are all reliant upon people having cars. And I've heard so much even today about, well, we're spending so much dollars on our road infrastructure, yet I don't know of a single bus that doesn't ride on one of them. And so we have to maintain them. And so I'm just kind of saying it's time for us not to keep pitting car drivers and transit riders against each other, but help understand that each has their own needs and the areas, and the costs are different, and how we fund them is going to be different rather than just saying it's just as simple. I don't know if you have any comment on that or not.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Trow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, thank you. And I appreciate the question, and I would agree with, 90% of what you've said. It is complex. We have set up a funding system, which is, among other things, ironic in that the more people drive, the better the transit funding does out of MVEST funds. I hope you didn't hear me, anyway, pit one mode against each other. My goal, admitting that I only had the 6 minutes that was allotted, was just to sort of underline for folks that one of the challenges that we face here in Minnesota, which is that, as you correctly observe, it's really expensive to drive and own a car, and that we haven't provided folks with good other options. That's really all. And just the magnitude of that challenge was my goal today. You're going to hear, and I know that this committee is going to grapple with ways to improve that situation. And I look forward to being part of those conversations. My hope this morning was just to help us think about. I think that if you'd indulge me, Mr. Hornstein, for just 20 more seconds. When people ask me, what I do. And try and describe it, and it's, a lot of the times I get, well, we have to drive cars. We have to. And a lot of people just can't. And a lot of people can't afford it. And this committee can make car ownership in Minnesota less expensive in some ways. You're not going to probably bring the annual cost of ownership down a lot. So how can we provide options for people in a way that this committee can. You can't change the price of used cars substantially. You can't change the cost of gas substantially. A little bit around the edges, right? But probably not substantially. So what other options, whether it's for affordability reasons or for just access to people that can't drive, right? They're the folks that I quoted from Hugo. They're retired. They're too old to drive. Let's get them to the grocery store. Let's get them to see their families. That's my goal.
Thank you. We have time for one more question, and we'll give that to Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Chair. My concern about just what you're talking about, you kind of focus on cars as the main inflationary factor here, but it's in everything. Everything they're buying today is just going crazy, and we have to look at why that happened. Otherwise, we'll never outrun this problem you're talking about. So we have the LA docks, they were closed down basically. We have people that are struggling with the shot. We have a lot of things going on that are outside factors. But we look at this one as kind of the main fix, is going to transit. These people are struggling for a lot of reasons. And cars is one of them, but we have to look at what policies got us here. The reason this is all jacked up and the reason we don't have these cars available, there's a lot of things going on. So trying to fix it with just transit doesn't seem like it's a real fair way of going about it, but that's just a comment. Thanks.
Briefly, Mr. Frower.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. I would just refer you back to the slide of the used car prices over time, and this is we're not going to get the docks are open again, supply chains are flowing again. We're not going to get back to 1970. And I don't know that transit is the only answer. I hope that giving other options is part of the answer as well. But it's something that we in Minnesota can do. We can provide better options, whether those transit, walking, bike, making it possible for literally for people to walk to the store safely is another option that I think falls under the purview of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your answer. Thank you for your question. We'll move on now. We have a couple of testifiers joining us by Zoom. First is Dr. Sharon Pierce from an institution in the district I represent, Minneapolis Community and Technical College, the president and CEO of the college. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Dr. Sharon Pierce, and I am the president of Minneapolis College. Our college is one of the most diverse in the state of Minnesota. More than 70% of our students are members of minoritized communities, international, low-income, or first-generation students. This diversity enriches our dynamic learning environment. Many of our students face intersecting barriers that impede classroom success. Unfortunately, transportation is one of them. Students cite late and unreliable buses as one of the top five barriers they face in achieving a degree. Too many students must navigate a bus commute that's unreliable or unreasonably long. Our college does many things to minimize barriers. However, strong public transit is a key building block for student success that we cannot provide alone. Investment is needed. Investing in transit will serve the 40% of Minneapolis College students who depend on public transportation to get to campus, and the 29% who reported missing classes due to car trouble. To be successful, students also need reliable transportation to access health care, quality child care, job opportunities, food and other commodities, and recreation. Transit has a direct impact on the quality of all of our lives. So on behalf of Minneapolis College students, I ask you as state leaders during this session to provide the investment needed to maintain and expand the transit service that students rely on. As you know, this is not an issue unique to the metro, but one that significantly impacts rural and suburban communities as well. So please consider free or reduced fares for students, as well as investment in rapid transit lines. To quote Move Minnesota, transit is essential to creating a more just, joyful, and sustainable world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pierce. Our next testifier also is joining us on Zoom, Joy Rendles Hayden.
But they still don't have a quorum, I don't think.
Is Joy Rendles Hayden available?
You should be able to hear it. I don't know why you can't.
Well, we may have some technical difficulties. We can return perhaps to this testimony later. Is Peter? I saw Peter Wiginius earlier. Here he is.
We have one more person than we had before.
Hold on. We may be.
Yeah.
You can hold one second. We may be navigating this issue here. I saw for a second.
People with 17 empty chairs.
Yeah, I know.
You can't have a meeting with 17 empty chairs.
I know.
They used to have 17 in the committee, but it may be more
okay,
this session. But it's at least that many.
Yeah. Okay, I think we'll just proceed with your testimony, and then hopefully we can navigate this issue. Maybe we'll have have the testifier after you, Peter. Okay, is this yours? Okay.
That's mine, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Please, welcome to the committee. Mr. Wagenius, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Peter Wagenius. I'm the Legislative Director at Sierra Club, and I'm also a member of the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council, convened by the Commissioner of Transportation. So, how can we address the problems you've just heard about? How can we effectively expand equitable access across Minnesota's metro areas? Simple. We can scale up and replicate the success we're already having in Minnesota with bus rapid transit. BRT works in many areas. I'm going to focus on the Twin Cities metro area, in part because when it comes to VMT increases, the metro area is the problem, frankly. Fortunately, the metro area is also the solution. If the legislature is willing to fund a BRT, we can build it quickly. We can fund it through a local sales tax only in the metro area. These books are resources that people have used nationwide because bus neglect is a nationwide problem, both in regions that don't invest in transit and in regions that do. Minnesota is not immune from this. There are some inaccurate stereotypes about buses and the people who ride them, which are used to perpetuate that neglect. I won't repeat them here except one. Buses, some claim, are slow or unreliable, as if that is an inherent quality, but it's not. When buses are slow, it is because of policy decisions. Fortunately, Minnesota has every model needed to build a complete transit network. There are three forms of VRT in the region already, two in operation and one under construction. I'll go through each of the three quickly, but first, the obligatory disclaimer that bus versus rail is not a helpful debate. Ask me later if you want, but let's dive in. Gold Line, currently under construction from the eastern suburbs to downtown St. Paul, is an example of guideway BRT. The key feature of guideway BRT is its dedicated lane, which provides for speed and reliability. Think of guideway BRT as like LRT, but on rubber tires, also cheaper. The second form of BRT is highway BRT. And Orange Line started in 2021 from Burnsville's heart of the city to downtown Minneapolis. The key feature here that allows for speed and reliability is that most of the corridor is on HOT lanes on 35W. When we were building Orange Line, we like to say it's time to put transit in the fast lane, and we did. For time's sake, I'm not going to go through these next slides, except to say one good quality of highway BRT is that we can finally serve communities of color that were deliberately cut up or bypassed by the initial freeway construction. The next and third form of BRT is arterial, which is used on city streets, not necessarily in its own lane. Some would say that means it's not technically BRT, but whatever you call it, it is extremely valuable. It is a vital upgrade on corridors with existing bus service, which was or is needlessly slow. There's a lot you can do to improve speed, reliability, and the rider experience. The number one thing riders want is frequency. Which affects overall travel time the most. Not every trip is to a 9-to-5 job, so service on evenings and weekends is key. The other features listed here, common to all forms of BRT, improve speed even without a dedicated lane, although that is also a choice. We have added dedicated lanes many times for both rail and bus. Arterial BRT is a proven winner on increasing ridership. This includes regaining pandemic ridership faster than other modes. These projects succeed because they provide riders what they have been asking for. We've mentioned most of these, but it is worth highlighting sidewalks so people can get to more destinations, so people can get to stations. Many streets approaching suburban transit stations don't have sidewalks. That is one of the reasons the transit funding packages that you have approved in the past include a 10% set aside for walking and biking. Thank you. When you put all these features together, you have expanded freedom for many people whose mobility, whose freedom is needlessly limited. People's freedom of movement is something we can measure from any destination. You can see a map of freedom from downtown Portland showing all the places you can get to just through transit and walking in 15, 30, and 45-minute increments. Different forms of BRT serve different markets. Arterial BRT is planned in core cities and inner ring suburbs. The other types can go much farther out from the core if we build them. It's worth noting that both arterial BRT, shown here, and highway BRT, not shown, were studied a decade ago, and plans, network plans were developed for each. But only the arterial BRT network has been advanced quite slowly by Metro Transit. The other modes have mostly been advanced by counties, cities, and legislators. Again, thank you. Highway BRT is effectively an orphan. It needs adoption. The 2014 Highway BRT plan is sitting on a shelf. To conclude, bus neglect is something we can fix, but it didn't come from nowhere. It comes from biases in transportation policy. The most obvious bias is funding. We expend epic sums of money on car travel, sometimes spending millions on single intersections that are considered broken because drivers have to wait 45 seconds. But we have no problem making transit riders wait 45 minutes or more. The justification for this disinvestment is that user fees, in this case bus fares, that support transit do not cover all expenses. This is true. It is also true that taxes and user fees dedicated to roads don't come even close to covering their expenses. It is true that MVEST benefits both roads and transit, as noted earlier. It is also true that roads benefit from many general fund expenditures from the state, as well as local sales and especially property taxes. That's not to say we shouldn't continue to maintain our roads. Of course we should. But since all transportation, both roads and transit, are subsidized, we need to move past the myth that roads pay for themselves. We can design our transportation system around other criteria like cost-effectiveness, efficiency, equity, and environmental and public health impacts. In the interest of time, I will skip the rest of these except one. We will not get equity in the fourth, governance by equality of jurisdiction versus equality of people. We will not get equity in public policy if people are not represented equally in the decision-making process over transit dollars. For example, when votes are allocated on decision-making boards by jurisdiction regardless of population, rather than by population itself, then people are no longer equal. Should Carver County be part of our transportation plans? Of course. Including transit? Of course. But ask residents of Ramsey County if they should be less than one-fifth of a person in the decision-making process compared to residents of Carver County. I think they'll tell you no. Likewise, residents of Hennepin County should not be one-twelfth of a person in the decision-making process. There's a simple solution. One person, one vote is a principle you can use to fix this in any proposals moving forward. It is also the principle that brought all of you here today, having equal votes representing equal populations, to hear our testimony. And for that opportunity, I thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Members, we're going to see if we can get the previous testifier online, and if not, we'll have time for perhaps one question for either of our previous two testifiers. So we'll try one more time here, and hopefully... Is Joy Rindles Hayden available still? Try again. Okay. Any questions for either Peter Wagenius or Dr. Sharon Pierce? Okay, we'll move on. Thank you very much for your excellent testimony. Next, we have Luther Winder from the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Luther Winder. I'm Chief Executive Officer for Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. I just want to start off by saying that as a transit provider, I've definitely heard and I agree with and understand the concerns raised by riders, some advocacy groups, and experts. We support an equitable transit system that is sustainable, affordable, and comprehensive with coverage that reliably connects people in all communities, including community needs of people in the suburbs. This is an issue that is important to me both professionally and personally due to my life's work and being one of the few transit decision makers of color in the region. It's important to note that in 2016, when I came to Minnesota Valley, or when I was interviewing, I rode the services around the region and in my service area that I eventually got the job. And I was astonished by what I've seen as far as shelters as well as service quality. And I was really astonished and appalled by the fact that my system only had 6 shelters in the entire, I served 7 cities and I only had 6 shelters, none of which had heat. And the bulk of my stops were flag stops. And the reason for that was lack of funding. Imagine being in a suburban community or being transitioned from the urban core to suburban community and realizing that you go from having to go to a bus stop to hopefully understand you have to flag a bus down on a roadway that is unpaved, that doesn't have this that has snow. To this day, even though we worked hard to transition over, still 40% of my stops are flag stops. And we've raised that to over 25 shelters in the service area, but the bulk of them don't have heat. So because of lack of funding. So it's important that transit is inclusive service, but it has to be welcoming to everyone, but it also must be available to everyone. The pandemic exposed a real and unanswered need due to the changed demographics in suburban communities, a need for equality that I've spoken frequently about, but has been unable to meet prior due to lack of funding investment. Most of the affordable housing is built in suburban communities. Since 1996, over 350,000 affordable housing units have been built over 180 communities. Less than 20% have been built in the core and urban center. Disproportionately, about 25% have been built in the 12 STA communities. In 2019, Microtransit and VTA Connect, following the lead of Southwest Prime, we started with 2 retired buses, 2 retired cutaways, no additional funding, and has now grown to 19 buses, 6 of which are past useful life. I talked to my chief operating officer yesterday and said 5 are in the shop right now because we still have those challenges. With ridership increase of over 130%, the vast majority of people on our Microtransit MVT Connect are women, people earning less than $50,000 a year. Approximately 20% earn less than $15,000, using a service primarily to go to work as well as connecting to our regional transit centers in my service area. Our reverse commute, our express service, like the demonstration project, our Route 495, the last received general fund appropriation in 2017, those customers are disproportionately people of color, using the services to go to work in Scott County and in Dakota County from the urban core. Move Minnesota highlighted that only a small fraction of jobs is reachable by transit in 60 minutes. Express and microtransit are some of the fastest modes in the region, complemented by BRT. Express routes and microtransit are about shortening distances and providing first and last mile to people between jobs and people. Transit providers right now, like Minnesota Valley, are faced with the decision of how to meet the demand of microtransit and continue to boost our other modes of service as they continue to return. We can't do both. We never have. For MVTA, trans equity means coverage, but must be just as much a priority as frequency. Justice 40 and disadvantaged communities within the suburbs need equity, but most importantly, inclusion and electrification, transit amenities like providing heat and windscreens improvements, and dedicated microtransit funding to meet the coverage needs of today and for the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your testimony, and we'll be revisiting that microtransit issue later on in our committee deliberations. So thank you for that.
Thanks, sir.
Our next testimony is from Anthony Taylor. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. My name is Anthony Taylor, and thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, committee members. My name is Anthony Taylor. I am actually here representing the Cultural Wellness Center, and really on behalf of all the organizations, particularly around active living and multimodal transit, movement, bike men, all of those that really support us in community. And as an organization, we really work from Eastside St. Paul all the way to Ely to actively work to connect communities of color, really to the amazing outdoor and active living opportunities that are really a part of why we live in Minnesota. I think think that I actually consider myself typically, I think, a cyclist who really became an advocate around biking, who really learned that this was actually me being an advocate for active living and transit. And most recent iteration of who I am is really a mobility justice advocate. And this has really emerged in terms of work that I've done regionally and nationally around how we're connecting equity to what we do in terms of transportation. And I think that I really would like to express my evil plan is that we, all of us, work actively to move behind an idea of mobility justice and that we partner to permanently fund transportation done well and really think about that as mobility and really understand that it is central to creating equitable economic vitality and quality of life impacts for all of our communities right now. Mobility justice, as a frame, demands that we are fully excavate, recognize, and reconcile the historical and current injustices experienced by communities with impacted communities, you know, given space and resources to envision and implement planning models and political advocacy on streets and mobility that actively work to address historical and current injustices experienced by communities. I acknowledge that transportation and mobility can be interpreted in a multitude of ways, but at its core, mobility is the ability to move or be moved freely and easily. This is good transportation, and we believe that all people have a right to mobility. This includes disabled folks, you know, immigrant communities, migrant workers that are in our communities, that we are really thinking about people experiencing homelessness, youth, elders, and other groups who have been historically confined in their mobility for a variety of socio-political reasons. A person's ability to move around freely is directly tied to their access to opportunities, such as jobs, education, affordable housing, affordable health care. I would say this is also the foundation of good transportation. If a person's transportation options cannot physically get them to their appointments, to attend school, to connect to the important assets in their communities, then their mobility is constrained. If an individual has limited or no access to transportation and mobility options, they will also likely have less access to power and decision-making processes. Mobility and transportation done well are the lifelines of healthy communities of opportunity. As we make investments in innovation and the future that we think about transportation, I think we need to think more expansively about mobility. Do we stay in the status quo? Or do we take this opportunity to say, yes, we absolutely need, for example, EVs, and we need charging stations, right? But we can also expand other transportation options, buses, BRT, light rail, commuter rail, streetcar, cycling, walking. As you make decisions and work deeply to increase options for funding transportation well, let's say mobility in the form of transit, bicycling, walking specifically, please consider that transit-oriented development is intersectional in its nature because the impacts to access to opportunities is influenced by this. And those opportunities such as jobs, education, affordable housing, and affordable health care and active living provide the foundation of the communities of opportunity that we all aspire for and that are part of why we stay and live in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Our next testifier is Michelle Molstead. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Michelle Molstead, Chair Hornstein and committee members, Michelle Molstead, St. Paul, Minnesota, a Move Minnesota volunteer. Thank you for taking your time to listen and to make decisions about transit for all of Minnesota based on good data and helpful stories. Very early this morning, I learned from Google Maps that I can take transit from St. Paul to a point in every committee member's district by transit, except for Representative Murphy's, according to Google Maps, but they were wrong. I learned about Rainbow Riders, so I can make it to Brandon, I believe, which is an intriguing project, which I'm looking forward to doing. I confess, I did not take transit today, although I'm a regular transit user. I rode my bike. It's not far, and the parking's really great. It's 21 steps to the front door, and it's a little faster. I'm embarrassed about that a little bit. I told a friend that, and she said, don't be embarrassed, because bikes and transit work together really well usually, and they're all a really important part of our transportation toolkits, so I'm no longer embarrassed. As I was riding over, though, I was thinking about my testimony, what to say, how smug I feel about no longer owning a car and the money I save, the little community of transit riders at my bus stop at 5:30 in the morning talking about food and concerts and how good or bad the Vikings were playing. But I keep returning to the testimony from Janice Watts of Fresh Energy at this very committee 2 years ago in discussing Rosa Parks and Claudette Colvin and Transit Equity Day. Ms. Watts used the phrase, freedom to travel. I stopped at the Hubert Humphrey statue on my way over and read some of his words. Particular favorite is his statement, freedom is not real to me when I have it and my brother does not. Freedom to travel is a value I'm confident everyone in this room shares. Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee members, for centering transit policy around the freedom to travel for everyone in our state. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And as a fellow non-car owner, I've also had those many minutes on Google trying to figure out particularly how to get from point A to point B. So I can relate to that testimony a lot. Thank you. Our next testifier is Shanasha Whitson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members of the House Transportation Committee. My name is Shanasha Whitson. I'm the Executive Director of Community Partnership Collaborative 2.0. We provide referrals to psychologists and psychiatrists for those experiencing mental health issues, case management to those impacted by gun violence, navigation to those seeking insurance through MnSure, and consulting to those starting small businesses. Transportation is so important to communities. However, the history of transportation in the Black community is one that has always divided and/or destroyed the economic viability of the community. There are dozens of examples that we are well aware of, most notably in St. Paul, where Highway 94 ran through the vibrant Rondo community. Since this is a Transit Equity Day themed hearing, equity to me means fairness and justice. With transportation, that means expanding public transit without repeating the same harms. In future planning, it means involving people who use transit, especially those who have been harmed or left out. When Community Partnership Collaborative 2.0 partnered with Move Minnesota to provide education and awareness about the Blue Line, we were super excited. The community I serve was super excited. But we need to make sure that transportation like the Blue Line does not destroy economic possibilities for the community and instead creates an economic conduit so that the historically poverty-stricken communities can access the transportation that they need to rebuild and build wealth. Transportation is very vital. It's a very vital part of the community's existence and its one of social determinants of health, especially for those who have historically experienced health disparities. I hope that you members of the Transportation Committee will commit to deeper, long-term, and truly equitable funding for transit. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work in the community. Our next testifier is Grace Bassicali. Grace, okay, hopefully we'll hear from Grace later or another time. Our next testifier is Sandy Lucas, who will be joining us on Zoom. Sandy, are you available? Sandy Lucas. Okay. Hopefully we can return to that testimony as well. Our next testifier is Miguel Moravec. And after Miguel's testimony, we'll take a quick break to see if there's any questions of Miguel or any of the other testifiers. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Miguel Moravec, and I work for RMI. Transit equity is climate justice, and prioritizing these values takes comprehensive policy at the state level. Today, we'll discuss a compelling strategy from Colorado that we believe advances equity and has many co-benefits that could be potentially viable here in Minnesota. For those of you who aren't familiar with RMI, we're an energy nonprofit working to make a zero-carbon future more accessible for all. Our tools were used by the state of Minnesota to develop the climate action framework, and we also co-lead the America is All In Coalition, the largest grouping ever of localities, businesses, and cultural orgs, including many here in Minnesota, looking to solve the challenges of climate. So let's be clear. Climate change is one of the largest drivers of inequity, both in the U.S. and globally. Impacts like those you see on the right are escalating, and in addition to threatening our health, they're also driving up the cost of critical needs like food, water, and housing. These disadvantages are distributed unevenly among vulnerable populations, especially for communities of color. So, if fighting climate change is central to advancing a just future for all, why is Minnesota not aligned with its own statutory targets? The answer to this is transportation. In the U.S. and Minnesota, transportation is the largest driver of greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change. Reducing rather than expanding pollution in transportation systems goes hand in hand with promoting justice for frontline and fence line communities. While there's been many positive policy developments in this space, more needs to be done. Analysis shows that spending from the bipartisan infrastructure law is taking those dollars and putting them towards emissions intensive, less equitable projects like highway emissions would actually increase emissions even higher than they are now. And while the Minnesota Clean Cars Rule is a positive step in the right direction, electric vehicles alone will not solve the emissions in this sector. Expanding transit and multimodal solutions must be a part of this strategy. I'll say that again for emphasis. Expanding transit and multimodal solutions must be a part of the strategy if we're serious about tackling climate change and inequity. As has been mentioned today, though, these projects are underfunded and will not meet projected mobility requirements for Minnesota. To solve the lack of investment in multimodal options, RMI looks to the Colorado Greenhouse Gas Planning Standard as the gold standard of equitable mobility policy. This rule works by not just measuring emissions, but taking action on the data and setting local-level MPO climate targets. Then, investments from the state DOT are obligated to meet these targets and shift dollars towards projects that expand access and affordability. In this case, Colorado shifted $1.5 billion away from highway expansion projects and into bus rapid transit and multimodal solutions that better serve residents. This standard will not only align transportation projects with 100% of the state's climate goals, but it will also produce $40 billion of savings for everyday commuters across all modes. If Minnesota were to adopt a similar planning standard, it would best position itself to be competitive for $200 billion of discretionary funding from the infrastructure law. As has been discussed, the funding is out there if you prioritize equitable projects. Please note that this money is reserved for communities in Minnesota in both rural and urban areas where they need it the most. The need for affordable transportation is important now more than ever. 3 out of 4 rural residents live well below the statewide median income, and more people are facing obstacles to exercise their freedom to move. This Transit Equity Day, I personally celebrate Rosa Parks and her decision not to just observe and measure and discuss the inequities around her, but to also stand up and act on them, advancing transit access for all. This body has the opportunity to also act and not just measure on inequity. In conclusion, consider adopting a transportation planning standard like Colorado's, a policy that digs deep into making transit more accessible through investment, and that allows Minnesota to lead the Midwest in meeting climate goals and providing more affordable mobility for all. Thank you for considering our presentation, and I stand for questions.
Thank you so much. Members, we'll take a break for questions in a second, shortly. I think we do have Sandy Lucas potentially back with us, so we'll hear that testimony, and then we'll take a quick break for any questions. And thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hi.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Glad we connected with you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Sandy Lucas. I am a teacher, librarian at Leap High School in St. Paul. We're the only public high school in St. Paul specifically for new to the country immigrants and refugees. Sorry, I missed my call earlier. I'm actually at the library here at school, so I had students in here. The school district eliminated access to school buses for our students during the first semester this year, and our students relied on public transportation to get to school. And while we were very grateful to have the public transit alternative, our students reported witnessing everything from open drug use to sexual and physical assault during their rides on the trains and buses, which for our students who have already experienced a lot of trauma, re-traumatized them on pretty much a daily basis. Support and investment in public transportation is one of the best ways to redistribute wealth in a community. It is a matter of equity, which many of you have already addressed. Thank you. Many who cannot afford to drive their own vehicles, including most of our students, must rely on public transportation. I believe that if public transportation were more reliable in terms of time, and if it were more accessible in terms of where it is available, and if it were safer, more people, regardless of the economic status, would use it, decreasing the ecological effects of individual vehicle use, as well as providing a natural space for people from different walks of life to mingle. Thank you for your attention to this very important issue.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad that we were able to connect with you. That was really very helpful and important testimony. And now we are going to take a break for questions for any of the previous testifiers since our last question break. And we have Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is really in response to some excellent comments that were just made from the last testifier. So I think that Chair Hornstein will probably acknowledge that I'm one of the individuals on this side of the table who doesn't automatically discount the idea of Metro Transit or trains or any of these things. I've never brought forward an amendment to try and kill some train that has been just a, I think one member last year used the word boondoggle many, many times on the floor. But I've never done that. And so I fully understand and believe that there is a part that needs to be played with metropolitan transportation. With that being said, I'm a logistics officer in the Army Reserves. My job in the Army is to get all the supplies that the soldiers need to the battlefield. First off, as efficiently as possible, but secondly, just to get it there. Right now, what it seems to me is our transportation system here in the metro is just getting it there. There's no efficiency whatsoever. We're not trying to make this a better thing. We're just trying to get more people or more bus stops, or we're trying to put more money into it. We're trying to expand it to a larger area, and very little is being talked about how do we make it better. And so I very much appreciate the conversation that was just had, because one of those things, there cannot be an argument. We're talking about Transit Equity Day. There cannot be a conversation about equity without the understanding of safety as a primary driving force. That is, anyone who can choose not to ride these is choosing not to ride these. Talking about open drug use. So the only time I ever ride Metro Transit is when I have to fly under Army orders, because the Army has said, we want you to park at Fort Snelling. They've got a very large long-term parking at Fort Snelling. And then I jump on the train for one stop to get to the airport. That's what I do. And in my one stop, I have seen many things that make it so I will choose not to ride that. Even when I have something that I could just walk right out the door here, jump on the Green Line and take it for a 15-minute drive, 15-minute ride to Minneapolis, I'll choose not to do that, because I don't want, the last time I was on the train, there was a dude who, man, he had some real nice jams going on with his big old boombox, and he was dancing up in the end, he was dancing all over everyone. And it's an uncomfortable situation that someone who's just trying to get to the airport to fly somewhere doesn't, I don't want to do that. And that's the biggest problem here. So if we're talking about Equity Day in transit, safety has to be a primary focus, because without that, people who should be riding these, could be riding these, and would choose to ride these are not riding them, including myself. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And I know that many of the transit advocates in the room are concerned as well. And they are working with Vice Chair Tabke and others on legislation that we've passed through this committee for transit safety a couple of times, and we'll do that again this year. So we'll appreciate, a deeper conversation and hearing about that topic. We'll hear from Representative Petersburg, and then we'll move on with our final testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the current testifier that's up there from Rocky Mountain. First of all, I'd like to know kind of what your definition of equity, and you can certainly do that later, because everybody seems to have a different definition of that. But my real question is in regards to your slide that talks about $40 billion savings between now and 2050. That'd be 27 years. I'm assuming that you mean that's $40 billion savings to the person that's using transportation system. Do you know what the investment cost and what it would cost in order to achieve that $40 billion savings to those that are riding?
Thank you for that question, Representative Petersburg. And I want to point out half of those projected savings are from safety, sharing in what Representative Olson discussed, from traffic fatalities, injuries, insurance, and vehicle property damage. So safety is definitely central to that. You asked what the cost would be of implementing that sort of standard, and from my understanding of the Colorado rule, I won't speak to Minnesota, it takes pre-existing appropriated money and just shifts the investments from some types of projects to others. So I don't have an exact number for what that would cost here in Minnesota, but I do know if you're concerned about safety, if you're concerned about tapping into federal funding like that $200 billion of discretionary from DOT, this policy is what we see as the gold standard to getting more federal funds and support to implement the transportation solutions, that you'd like to see here in Minnesota. Does that start to answer your question, Representative?
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it indicates that we really don't know what the cost is. And even if we did, it sounds like you said in Colorado they shifted it from someplace else, which means that something else is missing those funding. And so it's always kind of nice to know, certainly what we think the benefit is, but if we don't know what the cost is, we don't know really if that benefit is worthwhile. And it's a hard thing to get our handle around for us to put our heads around. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm sure we'll be talking about this later as well. Yeah. So thank you.
And very quick follow-up.
Yes, please.
These savings were calculated using federal formulas for the state of Colorado that would very much be applicable here in Minnesota. and RMI stands ready to conduct that analysis to help inform your process as you consider prioritizing certain investments over others.
Thank you. And before we move on to the next set of testifiers, I just wanted one more opportunity to address the important question that or point that Representative Olson made. You know, in addition to Representative Tabke, Representative Elkins, Representative Sensimura are also engaged in this safety conversation. And Representative Tabke, you had wanted to make an announcement about a meeting coming up on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, yes, as someone who has become an unexpectedly transit-dependent person getting between Shakopee and the state capitol most every day, I've experienced a lot of what Representative Olson and a lot of folks have talked here about, and so we have been working on this for a while, but we are working on a project to not just the transit, what we lovingly call the Transit Ambassador Project for years now, but other ways that we can improve safety in the transit system, specifically on Green Line and Blue Line. And so I've talked to a lot of the folks in the room here so far about this plan and what we want to do. But on a week from tomorrow, so February 10th, on Friday at 11 a.m., we're going to be having just a community discussion via Zoom. So anybody who is interested in transit safety and has ideas and thoughts, we're going to introduce a concept that we're working on and get feedback on that. And then toward the end of February, have a committee hearing all about transit safety. So that is our plan moving forward. So if you want to get Zoom link and be invited to that, just text Enid. Is that okay? Or send an email to Enid or myself, and we'll make sure that you get on that list. So just wanted to make sure everybody is aware.
Thank you for that initiative. Okay, members, we're kind of going to have our last set of testifiers, and excited to have Ryan Timlin, who can speak from the perspective of a transit operator.
Doesn't matter which spot here.
Wherever you feel comfortable.
All right, thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Ryan Timlin. I'm president of Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005. We represent 2,000 transit workers in the state of Minnesota, mainly on Metro Transit, but also in Rochester and the First Transit property that operates the U of M buses and Plymouth Link buses. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, committee, for having this today. I do like to say, you know, it is an honor to be speaking about equity, especially December 1st, 1955, with the actions that Rosa Parks took to begin the end of segregation on the bus systems in Alabama and create more equity throughout the country. The civil rights movement, you know, one of its huge goals was not only ending segregation, but economic justice. And I'd just like to say, you know, as a union member, one of the biggest things that ATU does is make sure that everybody is equitably represented. So no matter what job you're doing, you will get paid the same thing, no matter your race, creed, background, religious background, or any of that. You're paid for your work classification, whether you're maintaining or operating, or if you work in the call centers that answer to assist riders in getting to the correct buses. We provide services to extremely diverse communities, and if you walk into Metro Transit, you will see it's an extremely diverse community that works there. With that being said, one of the biggest, as I mentioned before, economic justice. One of the things I'd like to raise here today is too often in transportation, only the focus is on brick and mortar and not the actual workforce who maintain, operate, and provide these services, who actually come from these communities and actually use these services as well, too. Many workers in this country are facing, you know, economic strains, as has been referred to, with inflation. I mean, look at what egg costs are going up consistently every day. With that being said, we're struggling to find the workforce while this system is being expanded. And one of the things ATU is trying to fight for, and I think every worker should be demanding across the country for equity, is cost of living adjustment being brought back into our contract where wages go up with inflation, but even demanding a bit more than that, cost of living plus 1%. I don't think that should just be within our workforce. I think that should be a demand for all workers across the country, but I want to bring it forward here to talk about we have a shortage and we need answers to on safety, and if anybody wants to talk about safety, we have the workforce that will talk to you about safety. We've been trying to get these words out for a long time about safety on the system, but also we need the workforce there, and one of the issues is actually wages to help keep up with the ever-mounting costs that workers face every day. And so that is one of the demands I just wanted to bring forward here that we were really fighting for equitable, to help workers equitably keep up with the surmounting bills, rent, food costs that they face consistently every day. Thank you for allowing us to testify. And again, I'd like to talk to anybody here who would like to talk about safety as well.
Thank you so much. And yes, absolutely. And we hope that you and other operators will participate in the meeting that Vice Chair Tapke talked about. So with that, thank you. And our next testifier, I'm very, very honored to have in our committee, Commissioner Irene Fernando from Hennepin County. And as Commissioner Fernando is making her way up, I wanted to let the committee know that since Commissioner Fernando walked into her position at the Hennepin County Board, she's just been such a tireless advocate for mobility justice, and it's very much appreciated. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair Hornstein, representatives, thanks for the opportunity to speak, and thanks to advocates and residents for including me today. I'm Commissioner Irene Fernando. I use she, her pronouns and represent District 2, which includes Plymouth, Medicine Lake, Golden Valley, St. Anthony Village, and Minneapolis. I'm the first Filipino-American elected in Minnesota. I'm the youngest woman to serve on the Hennepin County Board. And I'm the first person of color to serve as board chair since Hennepin's founding in 1852. I am dedicated to advancing equity by advocating for those who are marginalized or structurally disenfranchised. And these identities and dedication greatly inform my testimony today. It is good government to follow data and eliminate disparities to benefit our communities. This requires a systemic approach, embedding equity directly into decision-making and removing inequities in policies that are barriers to equal opportunity. Historically, our transit system heavily prioritized suburban commuters coming in and out of downtown and riders who are able to choose transit. Given the shifts in work locations and patterns, as well as a growing chasm in household income levels, equitable transit design requires deeper commitment to workers and families. So night shift healthcare workers can travel safely, elderly can ride confidently, and a parent with grocery bags and a toddler can efficiently get home. Transit investments advance equity through economic and housing development, which we are already demonstrating with the Blue Line Extension Light Rail. The Blue Line serves communities who are transit reliant, racially diverse, and have felt the lasting impacts of historic redlining and disinvestment. Alongside transit investments, Hennepin is generating deeply affordable housing for residents, igniting economic development for small businesses, and building wealth for working families. Meaningful transit investment from the state can change the trajectory of what's possible for all Minnesotans, with transformational benefits from climate action to construction jobs to improved health and educational outcomes. Mr. Chair and members, thanks for your leadership and remaining steadfast in your commitment to transit equity. Appreciate the kind words about my tirelessness, but I'm also a little bit tired. And thanks again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate your comments and I think a couple of previous comments about the housing transit nexus, and that's going to be something that we address in this committee as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we have about a little more than 10 minutes and about five more testifiers. So I'm going to ask the remaining testifiers to stay within that two-minute guideline that we gave. And we have another wonderful elected official, Commissioner Becky Alper from the Minneapolis Park Board. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Hornstein and members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Becky Alper, and I represent District 3 on the Minneapolis Park Board. Very happy to be here with you today. Rosa Parks was an all-purpose rider, transit rider. She rode for work, to visit friends, to get groceries, and for events. But there's a societal narrative that might have called her a captive rider because she didn't own a car. This commonly held idea by decision makers and transit planners says that riders fall into one of two categories, choice or captive. Choice riders, so the idea says, could drive places if they want to, so we need to woo them with things like Wi-Fi and cushy seats. On the other hand, captive riders have no choice because they don't have a car and thus will ride transit no matter the quality of the ride. This is a false dichotomy. An Evergreen report from the nonprofit organization Transit Center argues that all transit riders have choice, and it's better to describe riders as occasional, commuters, or all-purpose. When all-purpose transit rider Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on the bus, she had choice. Rosa Parks fought for civil rights on transit. If you transported Rosa Parks to today, I think she would be fighting for many of the things we today call equity, things that an all-purpose rider needs. We desperately need the following to create an equitable system: increased walkability, frequent service, and higher travel speeds. We need those pedestrian connections to make transit work for people. Once an hour service just doesn't cut it for people working in a service job or as a seamstress like Rosa Parks or really anyone. And once on board, in the name of equity, transit riders deserve dedicated bus lanes and transit priority to get where they need to go faster. It is not enough to be pro-transit equity without lending your voice to elevating walkability, frequent service, and travel speeds. We can only achieve these goals by providing long-term, stable, new funding. I believe that Rosa Parks would agree. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and grounding us in some of that important history. I believe Grace Bassett-Cayley has joined us. Good to see you again. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Grace Bassett, and I apologize for being late. It is excruciatingly painful to have to be dependent on fossil fuel cars. When I open up the Maps app to search up the bus route to go from Brooklyn Park, and let me specify, on the border of Brooklyn Center, to Columbia Heights, a 10-minute drive is translated into an hour and 10-minute long bus ride. It pains me to know that I'll have to reluctantly pick driving over to public transit, resulting in the ill-advised consumption of more and more gas to congest the airways of Minnesotans, particularly those in low-income, minority-dense areas, highlighting the intersectionality of the climate crisis through transit. I am a 21-year-old climate justice organizer in the Twin Cities. I've been in this grassroots movement since the age of 16, when my drive was fueled not with fossil fuels, but with ambition and optimism, cultivated by those who emphasize people over profits. I spent my youthful years in the blue-collar suburb of Brooklyn Park, where transit is deficient. With two working parents having to be on the clock for most of the day, I could not depend on them to transport me from place to place, which restricted me. I was not able to pursue many opportunities such as obtaining a job, attending community events, and meeting new folks until I had the access of a car at the age of 17. I now travel south to attend college in Northfield at Carleton College, where, besides the infrequent and due to its price inaccessible Northfield lines, transit is absent. College students are scrambling to find transportation into the cities. I had the opportunity to travel to Scandinavia this past winter break to explore sustainability in that region. The second I stepped into the metro in Copenhagen, I was envious of that the Danes had a robust transit system, efficient to the point where it was quicker to hop on the metro than to drive, not to mention cheaper, and the commute was peaceful. The fact of the matter is transportation is a critical aspect of our daily life, and from work to errands and to connections, we have to transport, and it's imperative that we use the surpluses to fund sustainable transit.
Thank you so much for your testimony. So we have three more testifiers, and hopefully we will, again, our goal is to adjourn by 10. Amity Foster, Sherry Munyon, and Naz Mirkadi. And Antoinette Kamara, I think, was added as well. So if everyone maybe can come up so we can save some time. And then, again, keeping your testimony to 2 minutes or under would be helpful. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein and Chair and committee members. My name is Amity Foster. I'm a member of ISAIAH. I live in Northeast Minneapolis in 60A, and I've been transit reliant for more than 20 years. There's a lot of research into how public transit builds equity in our communities and how it can also be a system that addresses past inequities. I actually want to speak to you about the community of public transit. I am part of it because when you see the same people every day, you are part of a community. I've seen people at their best, their most mundane, and sometimes our worst. Public transit is also where I see the inequities in other systems play out in housing, jobs, healthcare, and public safety. So I thought about the stories that I wanted to share with you, like what illustrates transit equity, stories about missing friends that I can't get to on the bus, times I've been on the train and tried to figure out how to help someone who was clearly in distress, but I couldn't. I want to tell you about a guy I see regularly on the 11. He's older. I know people who would see him and be scared. He's a big guy. He's usually unkempt. You know the stereotypes I'm talking about. Once I started riding the bus again after the COVID restrictions lifted, he saw me and told me he had been worried about me. He was glad to see me and glad to know that I was still around. There's a lot of conversations right now about transit being unsafe, and these are real concerns. We should not dismiss them as discomfort. I wanted to highlight the community because when we address needs through the lens of community, we're also addressing them with an equity lens. An equitable transit system is one that is safe, affordable, and accessible by all who ride and operate. An equitable transit system is one that is fully funded with long-term, dedicated funding because we have decided to make transit equity a priority, not an afterthought. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll go to Antoinette and then Naz and end with Cherry. But again, we'll... I think now need to go a couple minutes after 10, and I'm going to really encourage people to keep testimony short. Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee, and we'll proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'll try to keep this short. Hello, everyone. My name is Antoinette Kamara. I do the civic engagement and advocacy work at a nonprofit organization called Ayada Leads, and we primarily serve and advocate for African diaspora women. For me, public transportation is very personal. Both my parents immigrated to the United States from Sierra Leone before I was born, and public transit was an intricate part of our story, and it has been for decades. Before moving to Minneapolis, I mostly grew up in Cottage Grove, Minnesota, and we still use public transportation very frequently, going from the suburbs to St. Paul to Minneapolis. And I would really like to stress what a lot of the previous testifiers have said about the importance of expanding transportation in suburbs. For a large part of my childhood, my mom was not able to get her driver's license, and whenever we needed to get literally anywhere outside of Cottage Grove, we would wake up at 6 or 7 in the morning, get a ride with my dad on the way to work, and catch one of like two buses that come in and out of Cottage Grove. And when I was little, I saw that as a fun adventure or like a little trip. But now that I'm older, transit has become very essential for me as a student, getting to work, school, groceries, anything I need to do. And I know a lot of students are the same way. In order to literally survive in Minnesota, public transportation is necessary for a lot of people. And looking back without rose-colored glasses, I can't imagine how difficult it was for my parents, for my mom, and all the people that are like her who do not live in walkable cities or places like Minneapolis, where we have nice transit apps and more frequent bus routes and transit options. It's just very important to me that we stress that people all over Minnesota deserve accessible, safe, and frequent transportation. And to me, equity is addressing that. People deserve the opportunity to go about their lives, take care of their families, commute with ease. And I don't believe we can be a state that says we support immigrants and marginalized communities without actually making public transportation a major priority. There needs to be expanded options outside of cars, especially in suburbs, and I can only imagine the opportunities, the interactions, and the advancements that can come if Minnesota truly becomes more modern and supportive of the people who really need it.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your important work in the community.
Thank you.
Is Naza Nurkadi?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, great. And Naza, welcome to the committee, and I think we're, if you can keep your comments to a couple of minutes, and then we'll conclude with Ms. Mannion.
Absolutely. Thank you. May I start?
Please. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Abdinasa Nokadi. You can just call me Nas. I work with Move Minnesota, and I have been a transit rider my whole life here. It is how my immigrant mother took me to my optometrist appointments. It's how I explored and played. Transit was the means of which I obtained my education. And in a manner of speaking, transit provided me the tools to advocate for itself. As an experiment this winter, to put my money where my mouth is, I have gone totally car-free. I take the bus to work 10 miles away, or my parents 11 miles in opposite direction, or to friends or for groceries. The point being is that I do this. And because of my experience, I can say without a shadow of a doubt that we could do better. I can endure the transit in this cold. I'm young and I'm tough enough. But they say at -5 degrees Fahrenheit, it takes less than 10 minutes for frostbite to pounce on exposed skin. And just late this past Sunday, my connection bus dropped me off at my next stop with 30 minutes to spare at -11 degrees Fahrenheit. Transit riders will often be put in life or death situations just like that. God forbid it's worse when there are delays. If you expect this transit system to work as it is, you are comfortable with transit riders risking their lives as they did last weekend and the weekend before that. So what choice is there for those who cannot afford the alternatives or those physically unable to drive? To suffer, endure, you have to choose to refuse that reality. And that's why I work now at Move Minnesota and why we fight for everyday Minnesotans guilty of trying to get from point A to point B. And thank you for listening to this testimony. I implore you to fight even harder for transit this year. And thank you to everybody for showing up and showing out. And thank you to the committee for having us. And I'm sure you'll see us at Move Minnesota a lot more these next couple of months as we work together to fight for transit. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And then we're going to have Ms. Mannion as our last testifier. And I'd like to, then we'll have a couple of very brief closing comments from Representative Sensenmura, who worked so hard to help organize this hearing. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Hornstein, committee members, my name is Sherry Mannion, and I represent the Minnesota Public Transit Association. While we would have loved to have had a transit director speak here in person today, that was not possible. Short staffing prevents transit directors from leaving their offices. One of them, in fact, is backfilling in their dispatching office today. Unfortunately, this is not an unusual occurrence. Due to the lack of funding for Greater Minnesota Transit, there is a lack of staffing both within the offices as well as drivers. Yes, we sometimes even have our transit directors backfilling as drivers too. By increasing investment in public transit across the state, we can address economic and geographic inequity and provide greater access to our citizens in communities large, small, urban, suburban, and rural. Yes, COVID resulted in decreased ridership across the state, but that does not mean the need for transit investment went down. Greater Minnesota systems are understaffed, and inequities in transit services were only exacerbated by the pandemic. Other riders should not experience reduced access to the basics for groceries, health care, and job access because of the decreased ridership right now. There is a lot of interest in purchasing electric vehicles to reduce pollution, yet there is a serious lack of capital being provided to do so, particularly now when the cost of buying a bus has increased by at least 30%. And I would just let you know that 30% increase is being applied onto orders that had already been in place and agreed to previously, which is a major disruption for operating budgets. Communities have varying financial resources, and the required 15 to 20% match from our Greater Minnesota communities for vehicles and operations also create inequities. There are varying levels of resources per community, and this is becoming a challenge. The 15 to 20% match is required for both the state and federal dollars, so only supplying the federal dollars won't assist
Thank you very much, Ms. Bunyan. We are over time and need to move on. We're going to have our last just final words from
Representative Sensenmiller. Yeah, just really want to thank the folks, especially MJ Carpio, who helped to put together the program today. I think we heard from just an amazing diversity of voices. I did want to lift up one testifier who was struggling to get there on Zoom, Joy Rindles Hayden, who is a constituent of mine. Joy Rindles Hayden is a bus rider who suffered a traumatic brain injury as she was getting off the bus with her walker, and she has come to the Capitol year after year advocating for more safety training for bus drivers, and also really wants us to be thinking about, you know, ensuring that our sidewalks are getting plowed for folks that are getting off buses and need that kind of support. And, you know, the irony is that Joy was not able to be here today because to get from her home in Longfellow to the Capitol over public transit would take over an hour. And like we heard, you know, in the conditions, the winter conditions that we're facing, that was just not possible for her. So those are the barriers that, you know, prevent more people from coming into this room that are transit riders. But I thank everyone who joined us here today. I thank the committee members who I do feel like really listened to the stories. Thank you.
Thank you again for your work and help in organizing today. So members, next week we'll have a couple of bills, including a major active transportation initiative that Representative Elkins will be bringing on. We are not going to be hearing Representative Cagle's bill on Tuesday. That's been struck from the agenda, but there will be a couple of smaller policy bills that we'll be posting later today. And then a week from today, we'll have a deep dive into the governor's transportation budget. So, and then on the 14th, it's going to be the Representative Olson, Representative Murphy, and Representative Brand show as we really take a deep dive into the needs of small cities, counties, and other communities. So thank you very much for staying a few minutes later. With that, our meeting is adjourned.